Online marketing and communications. Marketing know-how for your business.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Online Marketing and Communications, the podcast that's recorded in the Doghouse studio in deepest, darkest Stockholm, Sweden. Today on the show, I'm talking to Tom Corson Knowles. And Tom, he's the host of the Publishing Profits podcast show. He's also a best-selling author on the Kindle platform of over 20 books. And he's written all sorts of things, the Kindle Publishing Bible, Secrets of the Six-Figure Author, Facebook for Business Owners, all sorts of things. And I thought it'd be very interesting to talk to Tom about how writing books, publishing them electronically, digital books, can be useful for businesses and useful for smaller businesses looking to grow their business and find new audiences online. Well, Tom, thank you very much for joining the show. Let's start off with that very typical podcaster's question. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, I wear many hats, but I'm probably best known for being a best-selling author. I've written over 25 books now. I'm a self-published author. I wrote my first book when I was 19. I was in college. And I never really dreamed of being a best-selling author or anything like that. I just wrote a book because I like to write. I enjoy writing. I know you wrote novels as well. So I think you understand that, you know, what that the kind of inner impulse to just write something and share ideas. And it was really just a very personal thing. It was really just for me. But what happened is I shared it with a few friends and family, and they really recommended that I, you know, pursue getting a traditional publishing deal. And so I did. I tried for 6 years to get a traditional publishing deal. Couldn't find an agent to represent me. Could not find a publisher. And the whole process was just incredibly frustrating and very disappointing. So I pretty much gave up on that dream. I started some businesses, did pretty well. And then about 4 years ago, a friend just mentioned in a conversation offhand, you know, why don't you just self-publish your book on Kindle? And that was a big shock to me because I didn't even know it was possible for an author to publish a book on Kindle. So long story short, I did all my research, read every blog post, every book I could find, which was, I think, 2 books at the time, about publishing a book on Kindle. And I did it, and within 12 months of publishing that first book, self-publishing that first book, I had my first $12,000 month in ebook royalties alone from Amazon Kindle. And that's kind of when my career as an author and an ebook publisher really took off.
Now, you use the term best-selling. How do you define best-selling? How would you, you know, how would someone get the credibility there for Tom there?
Yeah, so there's so many different bestseller lists now. I mean, the ones that people are most familiar with are things like the New York Times bestseller list and the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And those are more kind of like curated lists. But the list that most people use now in terms of when they say I'm a bestselling author is the Amazon's bestseller lists. Amazon has rankings, and Amazon's bestseller lists are the only lists that are actually totally objective. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's all kinds of stuff you can read online about the controversies and the things like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times bestseller list, because they're pretty biased for, you know, different reasons. There's certain sales that don't count, and, you know, people have bought their ways on lists and so forth. But with Amazon, the way that the bestseller lists work is it's totally objective. It's based on real sales figures. So the only way to become a, you know, number one on the bestseller list on Amazon is to actually sell more books than anyone else. So that's how it works. But with that comes a little caveat, because Amazon now has over 16,400 bestseller lists for ebooks and physical books, and that's just in the United States. So with over 16,000 bestseller lists and about 100 spots on each list, you know, that's a lot of opportunities for authors to become bestsellers. So today, I mean, there's so many bestselling authors out there.
I'm just completely bowled over. I didn't realize there were so many bestselling lists, but that's by the by. Thanks for clearing that up, Tom, because I'm aware that the New York Times list is something that gets played and, you know, there are always rumors about. So I was very interested in your answer there. That was interesting. Now, the reason that I invited you on the show, as well as the fact that you're such a successful writer, is that you've published so many different kind of books and you've built a business around it. And some of the books that you've published are business books themselves. And I thought it would be really interesting to talk to you and really tease out that question of what is the value of a book for business owners. Why should they write? And before we even delve into that, how difficult is it to write, Tom?
Well, how difficult is it to write? I mean, that really depends who you are and what your interests are. I mean, I work with a lot of clients, a lot of coaching clients, a lot of publishing clients, and I always try to tell people, look, you know, if you're going to spend time on marketing or building a business or whatever it is in life, you better really enjoy it and love what you do, or at least have an interest in it and wanting to get better at it. Because if you're not interested in something, you know, it's very hard to stick with it day in, day out, year after year after year. And that's the kind of activity it takes to really create long-term success. So I am not a short-term thinker. I don't try to, you know, say how can I make $1 million overnight? Like, that's not a good question to me. A good question is, how can I create long-term success? You know, and whatever that financial number is for you, or whatever that other metrics that you have. But it's always for me about long-term success. And so with long-term success, I look, you know, at my own life and look at other people's lives. Like, I've never seen anyone create long-term success doing something just to make a buck, or, you know, just because someone else was doing it and they thought it would be great to tag along. You know, like, you really have to actually find something you enjoy doing. You know, like, look at marketing. There's so many ways to market a business now. There's Twitter and Facebook and blogging and email and video. There's all kinds of different ways to market. And if you don't actually enjoy doing those things, it's going to be so hard to stand out from the competition, to actually stay with it and keep persistent at it year after year after year. You know, like, I love podcasting. So, like, an interview like this, it's not work for me. It's fun. I love it. Yes, I do it as a business activity. I know it's going to drive new leads to my business and grow my business and so forth, but I actually enjoy doing it. And so for me, I can do this for the next 10, 50 years doing interviews. Like, it's something I enjoy doing. And so I try to always get people to focus on, okay, what is it that you love to do in terms of marketing or building your business? And how can we, you know, fit your strengths into your marketing campaign, rather than having someone say, oh, I hate Twitter and I can't stand it, but I'm going to spend, you know, half an hour every day for the rest of my life doing it. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, there's so many other ways to market your business. So why waste time doing something you don't enjoy just to build your business when you can do something you do enjoy and build your business at the same time?
I'm glad we've answered that question, because, I mean, I know myself from having written a couple of books and a PhD that, you know, you've really got to believe in what you're doing, because just bashing out books is not something you do on a wet and windy Wednesday afternoon. It takes commitment. So now that we've established that you've got to have passion, you've got to have sustained commitment, because it takes time to write and rewrite, to edit, to be critical, to respond to feedback. Now that we've established that, what is the value of an ebook or a digitally published book for business owners today?
One of the biggest reasons is that a lot of people like is authority. So, you know, when you're a published author, you are a totally different person in the mind of your prospect than someone who is just an entrepreneur or just happens to own a carpet cleaning business or whatever. People just look at you different. They, you know, they think about you differently. They there's this, you know, still prestige and cachet that comes with being an author, even if you're self-published. And I know, you know, a lot of people still think that, you know, if you're a self-published author, it's not nearly as prestigious as being traditionally published. But, you know, when people look at your bio on your website or an interview and says you're a, you know, the author of such and such book, they don't care if you're self-published or not, right? And in, look at, I mean, the market has changed so much today. You know, people buy self-published books just the same way they buy traditionally published books. I mean, when you look at Amazon, you don't look at who the publisher is for the book. You don't care.
So I'm editing this right now and listening back, and I don't agree with Tom. I really don't. Yes, ebooks do demonstrate your value. Yes, the reviews on Amazon do demonstrate the value. But there is something about being involved in the publishing industry and having bona fide professional editors work with your work, fact checkers. I know myself from having published books that having a dedicated professional fact checker who goes through is absolutely imperative. And I do make a difference in the way that I react to books that are published. That doesn't mean that I don't buy self-published books. That doesn't mean that I don't value them. There is lots of great stuff out there. However, I think I'm going to come down on the side of that professional publishers are still that they really are the way to go if you want to be at the very, very top of your business. If you look at someone like my friend Mark Schaefer, who published The Tao of Twitter, he self-published to begin with, and then that was picked up by a publishing house, and it was republished by a traditional publishing house that had a much bigger reach, a much bigger outlet, that had the professional association of that name, that brand. And you know, you're not telling me that Mark does not appreciate, that he really doesn't appreciate being published by a mainstream business publisher. So I hear what Tom's saying, but I disagree. If you really want trust, if you really want the pinnacle of people's impression of what you can do, of who you are, of the credibility of what you're doing, try the traditional route of working with an existing, established publisher. But surely it's not just about trust and authority. It's also about getting your name known to new communities as well. Because, I mean, if you mentioned Twitter and blogging yourself earlier, that, you know, there's so much noise going on in the communication channels that a book is another way of being discovered. Have you found that, or in the coaching or the work you've done with other writers, have you found that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just an incredible way to build your business, to attract new leads, to attract new customers. You know, I'm a huge proponent of content marketing, or I like to actually call it educational marketing. And your book is an incredible way to educate your key prospects. So when I look at a business, you know, the biggest barrier to growing a business isn't, you know, a bigger marketing budget or, you know, something like this. It's almost always comes down to your customer just doesn't know, right? So if your customer knew that if they hired you or bought your product or service, that their problem would be solved forever, would they do it? Of course they would, right? So the problem isn't, you know, we need more marketing. The problem is we just need more education for our customers, which I consider that's what marketing really is about. So your book is an incredible way to educate your customers about how to solve their problems, right? In business and whatever business you're in, your customers have problems and they pay you to solve them.
I think it's really interesting that you're using the word educational here. I mean, it's something that we at Moondog do a lot when we're talking to customers about SEO, this whole idea that people go online to answer the questions that they have or to solve the problems that they have. And you know, we are so fed up with interruptive marketing of TV screens showing products at us when we're at the mall or driving on the motorway, the auto route. And what you're suggesting here is, for me, a very, very interesting way of referring to marketing, educational marketing. But when you start out planning a book, does that influence what you're going to write about, this whole idea of answering someone's problem or being educational?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to write a nonfiction book, I think that's, you know, assuming it's like a how-to book or an educational book and not like a memoir, I mean, the entire point for me of reading nonfiction books, and I read, you know, I read an average of book a week for the past 10 years. So I'm an avid reader, and it's almost all nonfiction. So I love to read and I love to learn. And for me, that's why I buy nonfiction books. Like, I want to learn something useful. I want to learn new ideas or new ways to do things to improve my life or make the world better. And that's what most readers want. And so, you know, it only makes sense to me to come at things from the customer's perspective. Like, anything you do in business, you should think from the customer's perspective, not just your own. And I think a big mistake a lot of authors make, a lot of entrepreneurs make, is that you think that my customer is just like me. They have the same problems, the same wants, the same needs. And that's very rarely the case. Now, sometimes it's exactly the case, and sometimes it's really not. And so you have to be open to, okay, what is it the customer really wants? And do your market research and ask the questions. And I mean, the amazing thing with Amazon today is it's so easy. You can go and you can look at books on SEO on Amazon, and you can see the reviews. You can see the 5-star reviews and the 1-star reviews and see what people love about those books and what people hate about those books. And you can just write a list just from reading those reviews and see, okay, exactly what your customers want based on the reviews that they're leaving about SEO. I mean, it's one of the most amazing places in the world to get market research, you know, incredibly valuable market research that you would otherwise have to pay, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to do focus groups or something like that. You can get totally for free on Amazon anytime you want.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We just worked with Beth Rogerson, who is a therapist here in Sweden, and we helped her get her book into the Amazon store, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes over at moondogmarketing.com/147. We helped her, and one of the things that we talked to her about while she was developing that book was if she looked at the kind of questions, the kind of tone of writing, the kind of language that people were using when they were commenting on similar books in the same sort of field, that it would be a way for her to find the right kind of voice that would connect with her potential audience. And that's, you know, like you say, the comments, the engagement, the data that Amazon gives you is incredibly important before you start writing. But let's dig a little bit deeper into that whole process of writing. You know, here we're beginning to talk about research. Do you see identifying the target audience as the important starting point, or is it identifying a topic?
Well, I usually back up a little bit and I start from the very beginning. So for me, from the very, very beginning, you know, the question I ask and I get my clients to ask is, okay, what do you want to write about? You know, what are you an expert on? And because a lot of times I think, like over 80% of Americans say they want to write a book, and most of them never get around to it. And so you might have an idea in your mind of, oh, I want to write a book about, say, SEO. But when you write down an actual list of ideas, of all the ideas you might want to write about and all the topics you're an expert on and all the things you know about, you usually get a list of, 10, 20, 30 ideas. And if you only make a decision based on one idea, it's not really a decision. You know, you're not really making a choice there. You just happen to have one idea and it's a yes or no option. But if you actually have, 20, 30 ideas to choose from, then you can make a real educated choice about which is the best book for you to write. So I think that's the most important step, is actually spend the time to brainstorm, get pen and paper and just write down these questions. You know, what do I want to write about? What am I an expert on? What problems do people have that I can help them solve? And really get clear on, the potential that you have as an author to create something that's going to help people, and start there. And so once you've got the list of ideas, then narrow it down to the one or two you really want to focus on. And then after you do that, then we go into the market research stage, where that's where we look at, who is your audience, what exact problems and challenges are they having, and how can we make sure we include those in the book.
With your approach, and whether this is for yourself or with the people that you work with as a consultant, do you say to them, or do you say to yourself, this has to come in at a particular word length? Some people that I've talked to say a certain amount of words are ideal for an ebook on Amazon. Do you work like that, or is a book as long as a piece of string?
Yeah, exactly. So I think a book should be exactly as long as it needs to be to solve the problems for the reader and no more. So I don't worry about word count at all,
because it's not
an issue. I mean, obviously you don't want your book to be too short, and at the same time you don't want your book to be just long winded and going on forever. But I think in the writing process, I personally don't worry about that, because it's irrelevant. Mm. If I'm writing a book about Facebook marketing and I want to teach you how to do exactly what you need to do to grow your business on Facebook, do you care if it's 300 pages or 40 pages or 5 pages? No, you just want to know what to do, what the problems are, and how to solve them.
That's really
all the reader cares about. So
because
it sounds relevant.
That's really interesting, because having written for the dinosaur age of paper publishing, numerous occasions I was presented by editors, okay, this book has to be 280 pages. I mean, this is when you're at the manuscript level, but it's like, you have to fill this number of pages, or this chapter has to be this number of pages. This is the wonderful thing about digital, is that it's given us this freedom. But the reason I asked you about this whole question of length and stuff is that one of the things that I come across in discussions about publishing, self-publishing on Amazon, is this kind of, and I think of it as a myth, that there is a sweet spot in terms of length, in terms of pricing, in terms of cover colors. Do you subscribe to this idea that there are sweet spots, or is everything original? Is everything a new venture?
I mean, there are no more rules. Traditional publishing had so many rules with it, like you just mentioned about word counts and, certain genres had to be certain lengths and so forth. And, again, does that really add value to the reader? Does it add value to the customer? I mean, most of the time it doesn't. And I've spoken with so many authors who were traditionally published and you know, had these horribly frustrating, you know, episodes of working with an editor where they had to change things about the book and so forth that really did not help the reader and really did not help the author get their message out there in the way that they wanted to. And I think that's a problem. And I think that's one of the reasons the internet is so popular, is because anyone now can be an author. Anyone now can be a media person with YouTube and video and blogging. And you're seeing people who in the past were absolutely never able to share the message with the world can now share the message with millions and millions of people through the internet. And I think that's what people appreciate. They want authenticity. They want truth. They want reality. They don't want some, you know, prepackaged, fluffed up, you know, book that's, you know, half fluff and half actual content. They want real, legit, straight answers direct from the mouth of the experts. And that's what self-publishing allows you to do, is go straight to your customer and skip those gatekeepers and keep your message authentic to who you really are and what you really believe in and the message and solutions you want to actually provide for people.
Okay, again, I don't agree with Tom here. Whilst I'm editing this, I'm thinking, no, sorry, that's rubbish. Traditional publishing houses, yes, they're going to bring their editorial expertise, but they're not going to censor you to the extent that you cannot show how authentic you are. Just because you publish it yourself, it's not about authenticity. The authenticity comes from your ideas, the research, the way you craft. There's so much more involved than just being a publisher. I've said before, I come from an academic background. As a trained academic, I have a doctorate. If you cannot defend legitimately your argument with a good range of data, scientific background, no matter what subject you're in, even in the humanities, you know, there is still the science of the humanities, science of literature, science of art, history, etc., etc. If you cannot define, if you cannot back up what you are saying, then you can be accused of fluff. And I think one of the things that traditional publishing houses will do is they will force you to address any weaknesses. Tom later goes on to talk about the importance of readers. I agree, it is important to have readers, but it's important to have professional readers, professional, qualified experts who are working on your text. And look, you do not survive in the publishing industry without being a professional. So, some interesting ideas there, but I disagree. So you've produced a manuscript. What's your editorial process?
For me personally, what I do is I spend a lot of time self-editing. So there's really two parts of the writing process that I like to teach. Is one is the creative writing process, and that's, you know, your right brain thinking, total creativity. So when I'm writing something new on paper, whether it's a blog post or article or book, I just let it flow. And I love to get into that flow state where, you know, I can be writing for 5 minutes or 5 hours and you just, you know, time just flies by, you don't notice it. And that's just total creative space. And what I avoid doing in that creative writing process is I avoid looking for typos and factual errors and grammar. And I just skip all that stuff. I don't worry about that. Because the minute I start to think of, oh, I spelled that word wrong, or, you know, that there should be a comma there, I get lost. You know, I get lost. I lose that train of thought. And, you know, it takes you out of that creative space. So I try to totally separate that creative writing process from the self-editing process, the more analytical process. And that's where, you know, you go and you do your research and you fact check and you make sure the hyperlinks are working and the grammar is okay and the typos are all fixed. That's the self-editing process. And so I usually go through at least 5 to 10 rounds of self-editing, full self-edits. And for me, that involves actually printing out my manuscript, which I don't like to do. I hate to waste paper, but I've just found through experience time and time again that it's very different editing a manuscript, you know, on my computer screen versus having an actual physical printed out piece of paper to work with and to make notes in the margin and so forth. So I really recommend for most authors that you do print out your manuscript, even if it's totally digital, even if it's totally an ebook, print it out, because you'll find more typos and more errors and more ways to add value to that manuscript if you just look at it in a totally different light. And I find that's what it does when I print out the manuscript. So that's my part, what I do. And then usually I'll go to a beta reader or maybe multiple beta readers. And a beta reader is basically someone who you trust, usually in your target market, your audience, who can actually give you some objective feedback on the book. So it's not your friends or your family. It's, you know, the best place to find beta readers are your own clients, your own customers. You know, if you're going to write a book, go to your existing customers and say, hey, I'm working on a new book. It's going to show you how to do X, Y, Z. And I would love to get your honest feedback on the book. And that's how you'll find, you know, many beta readers, and they can provide incredible feedback. But the key thing with a beta reader is you have to give them very explicit details on exactly what to do. So if it's, you know, an early draft of your manuscript, you certainly wouldn't want to tell your beta readers, hey, please find all the typos and errors in here, because it's going to be a waste of time. Because by the time that manuscript is professionally edited and you finally publish it, it might be totally different. And all that time that's spent trying to find typos for you would be wasted. So what I found is the most valuable thing to ask your beta readers to do is ask them, okay, is there anything missing from the manuscript? Are there any problems you have that I didn't solve here? Are there any challenges? Did there any part where you got lost or you couldn't follow it? That's the stuff you want to really hear from your audience to make sure it's a great book. And then once you've gone through that process, then that's when you go through the professional editing process where you hire a professional editor. And, you know, they'll focus on, of course, you know, the grammar and the typos and, you know, fact checking and things like that.
How much emphasis do you put on the value of having a professional editor, someone who is a professional wordsmith?
It's crucial. You have to do it. You know, even if you're a professional, you're going to make mistakes. So even professional writers need professional editors. And, you know, it's like a coach. You know, look at Tiger Woods. He's the best golfer in the world. And he's got like 7 coaches. You know, it's like, you know, none of his coaches are as good of a golfer as he is, but he can't see himself swing. And it's the same thing with your writer. If you're an entrepreneur, you need a coach. You need someone who can see your blind spots, who can tell you, look, you're great at what you do, but you messed up here. You need to fix this. And no matter how good of you are as an author, as a writer, you're still going to need that objective feedback from a professional who's really committed to making your manuscript as good as possible.
Now, with the publishing process, do you yourself design the book and put it into Amazon, or do you have someone else do that for you?
So, I mean, I'm not a graphic designer, and I definitely don't recommend doing your own book cover unless you are a very professional graphic designer. And that's so easy now. I mean, it's incredible how inexpensively you can get a very well-designed book cover. There's sites like Fiverr.com. You can get $5 book covers, and you know, many times they'll be awful, but you know, a lot of times I recommend, you know, go to Fiverr.com, get 20 different book covers from 20 different designers, and you'll find something with $100, you'll find, you know, 20 different mock-ups that you can find a really nice book cover that you like. There's other sites like 99 Designs that do something very similar. Well, they'll have a competition for designers. We'll compete to design your book cover, and I think it starts around $400. But you can get hundreds of people, you know, hundreds of different versions of a book cover and see which one you really like best. So there's so many ways now to hire graphic designers. I certainly don't think most authors should even try to do it themselves, because the book cover is really a key piece to your marketing. You know, it's going to determine how many people actually click on your listing on Amazon, how many people actually buy your book. And so having a professional cover design is very, very important to selling books.
What about the layout of the text? Do you lay out the text yourself in InDesign or word processor, or do you have someone do that for you?
Yeah, so for ebooks, you don't need InDesign, and you don't need any kind of fancy software. I actually use Microsoft Word because it's simple, it's straightforward. You can use any basic word processor. There's more advanced software you can use, but I try to keep it as simple as possible, because especially if you're new, I don't think it makes sense to spend a whole lot of time on formatting. You can hire someone to do it, but even then I found a lot of people just make mistakes because they don't see the whole process from the beginning to end. So how it works with an ebook is that when you publish it on Kindle, you can actually preview it, and you can actually publish on Kindle and see exactly, you can download your book from Amazon and see exactly how it looks before someone actually, you know, before someone purchases it, before it's actually available online. And so for me, when I first started out, it was all trial and error. I didn't, you know, there was no real guide to formatting an ebook when I started. It was just trial and error, and I just had to, you know, figure it out on my own. And so I actually have now a training course where I teach people for free how to format your ebooks for Kindle. So that's at ebookpublishingschool.com. And the first video, I walk you through the entire process of formatting your ebook for Kindle so it looks perfect. And it's so important to format your book properly, because basically your goal with formatting is that your reader doesn't notice, right? Because you just want them to focus on the book, on the value, on the content, not on how it looks. So, you know, if the margins are all messed up or the font's too small, or, you know, there's random spaces or there's page breaks where there shouldn't be, that's obviously not going to provide a good experience for your readers. So that's why formatting is so important. And you know, there's so many different ebook distributors now, and there's so many different formats now that can get a little bit complicated, but I try to keep things simple, and that's what I do in my training videos.
I think very much what you're talking about is solos, entrepreneurs, building trust for the individual, the brand of the individual. Could you talk a little bit about how you see a published book could be of value to a business?
Yeah, absolutely. So it can be a business in itself. I know several entrepreneurs who've created million-dollar businesses online, basically selling a book, or selling a book combined with a video course, or combined with some kind of educational program. And it's just such a, like I said before, it's such a powerful way to educate your customers. And that's what people want. They want solutions to problems. And you know, where do you go when you want a solution for a problem? Most of us, we read books, or we research online. And so it's really just think about things from your customer's perspective. What do they want? What do they need? What problems are they having? And how can I help them solve those problems? And if for you the answer comes up, well, my customers need more education, and so a book would really make sense, then it's probably a perfect fit for you.
Well, Tom, time is upon us. Finally, if people want to find you, I'll put all the contact details in the show notes that go along with this over at moondogmarketing.com/147. But is there anything in particular that you'd like people to know about or to check out that you're doing?
Yeah, so I've got my free video training course where I walk you through the entire process for formatting your ebooks for Kindle, publishing them on Kindle, and then videos 3 and 4 talk in depth about marketing your ebooks. So that's really valuable at ebookpublishingschool.com. I also have my own podcast show called the Publishing Profits Podcast. Every week we interview best-selling authors and entrepreneurs about what's working right now today in the online educational industry. So that's publishingprofitspodcast.com. And then my blog, where we talk about publishing, and you can see the publishing company information as well, is tckpublishing.com.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. So thank you very much there to Tom Corson-Knowles for coming on the show. Like I said at the beginning, all links mentioned in the show over at moondogmarketing.com/147. And if you've got any questions or comments, feedback, things you'd like me to take up on the show, just get in touch with me over on Twitter at John Buskell, JonBuscall. And of course, if you want to contact me in any other way, if you're not on Twitter, just Google me.
Online marketing and communications. Marketing know-how for your business.
As always, recorded in the Doghouse Studio. For more, visit moondogmarketing.com.